9 at Radio Free America, and this is Uncle Sam with Music and the Truth Until Dawn. Right now, I got a few words for some of our brothers and sisters in the occupied zone. The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache. It's 12 o'clock, Americans, another day closer to victory. And for all of you out there on or behind the lines, this is your song.
Now you cut that fence and get this platoon on the move!
Well, listen, you crummy, flat-footed copper, I'll show you whether I lost my nerve and my brains.
Man, we like to feel that we can get out of trouble quicker than we got into it.
I'm not fighting for anything anymore except myself. I'm the only cause I'm interested in.
Well, ladies and gents, it's been a while. Welcome to the Mountain Pass Podcast. This is your host, as always, and forevermore will be TJ Martinell. Coming to you from my new Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia. Just not quite as much the heart as it used to be. The date is November 8th, 2021. Another 15 days to flatten the curve, 2 AC, 2 years after COVID. You're probably wondering, why did it take so long for me to get around to doing a podcast? Quite a few things have been happening. And I'm doing this podcast, frankly, because I'm waiting for my dryer to get done because I got a whole bunch of other things to do. So that kind of goes to describe the busyness that I'm, the state of affairs for me. But the reason I was new in the podcast is because I was in the middle of dealing with a very precarious situation as far as my move to the west side of the state. For those of you who have been tuning in, my handful of loyal listeners, I decided to move to the west side and take the risk by selling my house. And I sold my house. And then I was in the process of buying a house, the house in which I currently sit, not to be anticlimactic and give away the ending, but yes, I do pull it off. Well, while I was in the process of buying the house, my employment status changed, which not to go into too many details, but threatened to cost me the house purchase. And thankfully, because of some creative endeavors on my part, I was able to salvage the employment situation. It had nothing to do, obviously, with my amazing performance on my job. It had to do with other things beyond my control, but I was able to find a creative solution to it. And so I ended up moving into this house. I pull it off, do the move, and after all this, I could go through the fine details of doing a house sale in conjunction with a house purchase. For those of you who have done it, you have my respects. That is a level of torture that and logistical nightmare that I do not wish upon anyone. Because when you're in the process of selling a house, you got to have your buyer have everything go right with their house sale. And the person who's buying their house has to have everything go right. And then you got to have everything go right with your process of purchasing the house that you want to buy. So it's kind of like Operation Market Garden, you know? So all the bridges have to link, because if one of them doesn't, then the whole operation falls apart. And for the history inclined listening to this, you'll get the reference, but we almost had an Arnhem crisis. We almost dropped an entire paratrooper division on 2 SS Panzers. But thankfully, the things got resolved, and I've basically just been moving all my stuff into the new home. So that is why I've not been doing the podcast. I can just tell you this. I feel like Indiana Jones sliding under the collapsing door and reaching for his hat right before it closes. Because that's how the way I feel about the housing market over here. Because when I bought my house was it was the limit of what I could afford. And in the months since I bought the house, there are no houses anywhere other than modular homes and prefabricated homes that are anywhere near that price range. And my house obviously is not a prefab. I would never buy one, or not a prefab, a fabricated manufactured home or a modular home. That's what I meant. Manufactured or modular. It's one of those houses. If you want to buy one of those, that's within a price range of a, you know, of commoners like me, the non-techies. So I feel like that's the last hurrah of affordable housing on the west side in this part of the state. I think I may have got the last house at that price range. And I'd add, this house is not small. It's got, you know, I'm not going to give too many details on the podcast, but it's got numerous bedrooms. It's got a significantly large living room. It's got a kitchen and all. It's a 1930s home. Original stuff. You know, a lot of the things haven't been changed, and that is actually part of the problem. As I'm discovering, I bought an old house. So my last house was a 1919 built, and built over the years. It wasn't in built in one point. And then this house was built all at once. So it actually makes sense. I understand why there's a room where there's a room. I understand why they have things the way they set up. It's done in a very old-fashioned way, which I like. One of the things I really am going to appreciate this winter is there's doors for every single room. So that way you can keep the heat. And the house actually keeps the heat in fairly well. The basement is actually very warm. It's an enormous basement. The basement is the size of the first floor. So I'm getting a house that's, I mean, frankly, in the West, if it was in the West Side and it was renovated downstairs, it would be worth $1 million. But because it's located where it's located and it's as old as it is, and it's got some of the, you know, it's not quite finished yet, or it's got some weird eccentricities, as with all old houses. For example, the kitchen was not designed for a refrigerator. This was built back when you used cold boxes or an ice box or something like that. And a wood stove. Here's what's crazy. I was at a fireplace store. I was looking at getting an insert wood stove, which I'm actually not going to do at this point, because this natural gas fireplace is insert is really effective. And I'm guessing it's going to be cheaper than buying a brand new wood stove and then also having it installed and all that other kind of stuff. But I went to the store to just take a look at some of the models, and what was crazy is they're still selling kitchen wood stoves. I could theoretically, because the chimney is still there for the kitchen stove on my house. If I go up to the top of the roof, it's still there. I could theoretically buy one and put it in the kitchen. Now, I don't think I'm going to do that. I'd have to do some research. It would be kind of a pain to do, but you know, because it currently uses natural gas, I'd have to turn off the natural gas, which I've never used before, so I'm getting used to that. I'm used to electricity. You know, one of the things, so I'm getting to the point of what I'm going to discuss, giving some, actually we'll go into this first before we get into the rest of the stuff. So I get into the house, move in, and immediately start seeing problems that I got to deal with. Where I have this pet peeve or something that just really bothers me, and it's with houses. Basements or foundations. I'm always worried about the foundation. I also hate water leaks. And I think the reason is because they can occur very subtly, and then you wake up one morning and the wood floor is rotting, or something's like, it's caused catastrophic damage and you never knew about it. So of course I find out that one of my, the drainage, there's a drainage. Okay. This is classic. We got to tell this story. So, so I'm having drainage problems with all the different, with the bathtub. These were things that I knew in advance because they'd done an inspector's report And I looked at the stuff. I knew what I was getting myself into. And unfortunately, in this housing market on the west side of Washington State, you cannot have any contingencies. You have to weigh it. What you see is what you get. And if I had made any demands, oh, that's my antique clock. We'll let it go. Okay. So I knew what I was getting myself into, but I also couldn't make any demands of like, hey, can you fix this? Can you fix that? Can you replace this before I buy? Because there were, when I was buying this house, I literally bought it while other people were competing for it because I had better financing. That's the only reason I got this house. Other people were willing to buy it outright. So I could not make any demands. So what I saw was what I got. So it had drainage issues in the kitchen sink. It had drainage issues in the bathtub and also with the laundry tray sink. So we're trying to figure it out. We're looking at the P traps underneath the kitchen sink and we're like, okay, there's nothing, doesn't seem to be anything wrong here. We go down into the basement and we go to where the water drains out into the septic. And what we saw there kind of defied our capacity to understand what the person was thinking. They had put insulation around a lot of the pipes because it's down in the basement and all that kind of stuff, and they're trying to protect against the cold. They attached a section of the PVC pipe to the ceiling so that it looked almost like a little V. Like there was a little summit before it drained back down. For people who are not, who maybe need a little bit more visual, with pipes, if you want it to drain right, it has to be at a certain angle continuously, or else you have problems because it drains through gravity. If you have an incline rather than a decline, the water's going to back up, and that's exactly what was happening. And this is not something that would have been, you know, oh, we could have never seen this coming. It's clearly something that would not have been good. And I'm not a plumber, but I know that that's an issue. So we, you know, pulled it down and the foulest stench came out of that when we took apart the rubber gasket or whatever it was that was holding them together, the two sections of the pipe. The foulest stench, I about puked. No joke. So we finally got a replacement PVC pipe. We reattached it. It's now draining great. Don't have to worry about that. And then we ran a snake down into the bathtub and got that opened up, or so we thought. So I'm taking a shower. And then one day I go back down to the basement to just check the drainage. And I see that there's water all over the basement floor. I'm like, okay, what's going on here? I go over to where they'd put insulation all around the plumbing, so I was pulling it back. The P-trap for the bathtub drain plug or overflow drain was so brittle it had been smashed by the snake. So that's why it was draining okay. It was just going right onto the basement floor. And then, you know, try pulling apart and disassembling piping and plumbing that has been rusted over because it's this weak, it's this brittle, broken, rusted over stuff. And then I had to get out the hacksaw and break off one of the clamps or whatever it was. I don't really, I'm not a plumber, so I don't know a lot of the terminology. I just know what it is. Something that was holding the clamp that was holding on the two pieces sections of pipe, I had to spray. Not only did I have to cut that off, I then had to spray this rust blaster stuff all over and finally yanked it out. I'm not a weak guy. If I have to use all my strength to pull a pipe out, there's something wrong. So we finally get that out, get the replacement for it, put it in, and are trying to realign all the gaskets and everything so that it flows and doesn't leak. And now finally this morning, I got that fixed. So now I can take showers without having the water go down into the basement. Now, to be fair, there's actually a couple of drain plugs in the basement along with a sump pump. So it's not that I have to worry about it. It's just I prefer my shower water go into the septic rather than into the basement. These are things I've spent the last, a couple days working on. The other thing I noticed that has turned into a complete project over the last couple days has been where I didn't understand why the owner did this, and apparently this is a fashion thing, but they painted over the old rustic-looking brick fireplace masonry with this gray paint, which to me just, it matched the walls, but it just, I hated it when I realized that that's not actually what it looked like. So I've got, oh great. So guys, I've moved from one area where I was near a train to an area where I'm right next to a train. That was actually one of the quieter ones. One day, I may not live next to a railroad crossing. But it is not this day. So I've been using this paint stripper to kind of get this stuff off. And for me, I've never had any experience with this. Have no idea how it works. And it was a complete mess to clean up. And it still is a mess. I've gotten, I'd say, 94% of it. It's mostly just the areas where the grout is that remains. So I've been scrubbing away at that, and then I gotta scrub the floors. And the point of all this is, this is the affordable kind of housing that's left here. If you want a brand new house, you're paying $800,000. There are no, or $500,000-$600,000. So this is something that has been very interesting to discuss with people who bought into the market. And I did that episode on the housing market and the dating marriage market. And I think that there's more comparisons. If you got into the housing market in the 90s, you just checked out. And what I mean by checking out is you checked out of what, you don't care what the interest rates are. You don't care about how mortgage rules have changed. You don't care about, or you're not following that stuff because it doesn't affect your mortgage. You're paying your whatever you're paying, and it's the same thing with the whole marriage thing. Once you get into the marriage market, once you're married, presumably you're not getting divorced. You don't have to worry about how the rules of dating have changed and what the expectations are for people who are getting married. It's the same thing with the housing. I talk to people where they presume that there are houses around this area that are within this price range, and I said, no, this was it. This is probably the last house that will sell for this price. Of this type, an actual house with a significant amount of space and a backyard and a workshop. That's another great thing about this house that I didn't have before, is that it has a very big workshop that I can store my motorcycle in. I can put all my tools in and access them easily. The old shed that I used to have was very rectangular. It was almost like a hallway. So that is the realities of the world, at least the world in which I live, is that things are constantly changing to your detriment in terms of prices are going up, things are becoming more unaffordable, and if you wanted to get into it, now is the time. And it's the same thing with my house. If I had not sold when I did and bought when I did, I would not be able to move over to the west side of the state. But there's a few life lessons that I've learned along the way that obviously I'm going to share here. The term the grass is greener on the other side, or is always greener on the other side, that is not always true, but it is something to think about when you're deciding to move somewhere. Because people tend to have this, I got to get out of here and I'm going to go somewhere else and it's going to solve all my problems. It's actually not going to solve your problems. And there's always going to be trade-offs. You know, moving over to the West Side has been great in some regards. I'm much closer to family who are able to work on stuff with me on my house. The prices are actually cheaper because it's closer to interstates. But there's also other downsides. In some ways, my lifestyle hasn't changed because the problems that I was dealing with didn't really have to do as much with where I was living. So I see a lot of guys who think, oh, you know, if we just move to Russia or we just move to this state or this county or this city or whatever, it's going to, you know, all my worries are going to be gone. It's going to be much better for me. Well, that may be true. It may also be you are looking for a silver bullet. You're looking for a solution to every single problem in your life when it will solve some problems. Because there are parts of the country that I could move to where I could probably sell my house and buy a house almost outright. That would solve my housing affordability problem and my mortgage. And not having a mortgage would be, trust me, not having a mortgage would solve a lot of my life problems. But it would create other problems. I mean, one of the reasons why people are so desperate to live in certain areas is because they want to be around people that they have a sense of community or sense of belonging with. So you can't break everything down in terms of economics. Because there's things that economics don't measure. Economics don't value, don't measure sentiment. For example, sentimental things. Something may be very valuable to you, but it doesn't have an economic price tag to it. You know, I have family antiques that for me are, they may be worth, let's say, $150 to someone else. It's worth more than that to me. So living in some areas, you can put an economic price tag in terms of what you're willing to pay to maintain it. You know, if I had to, I have an antique, the antique clock on the wall that you can probably hear click tick-tocking. That was a gift given to me by a family member. And I've spent a lot of money getting it repaired, cleaned, and so that it actually operates very well. But the amount I've spent on its repairs is worth far more than it's actually worth. If I were to sell it, I would not get that amount of money back. But I'm not spending that money for an economic reason. You know, there's I have this old 1970s retro REI backpack that's gone with me on a lot of hikes. It's gone with me on, I'd say, 90% of the hikes I've gone on in life. So it's been to a lot of places with me. I've spent a lot of money compared to how much it's... I could have replaced that backpack entirely with a new backpack with the amount of money I've spent on repairs, because it's, you know, gets torn up. It needs to be restitched. I've spent time buying leather, because the bottom part of the bag is leather. So I bought leather products to keep it maintained, keep it clean. The backpack is not worth that much in terms of resale value. It's worth more to me because it was a gift given to me by one of my family members, and I've also used it on a lot of hikes I've been on. So, you know, theoretically, my hope is to give that backpack to someone else who loves hiking. And, you know, make it something important, but it's not something you sell. I'll give maybe another example where economic value can determine, you can put a price tag on sentiment. My house is an original 1930s. A lot of the stuff has not been upgraded. It's the original flooring, original wall texturing, there's lead lined or lead framed glass cabinets. There's the original windows with the weights on the insides. So when you pull it up, weights inside of the walls come down or something like that. You know, and it has the original garage and other stuff like that. So if somebody's really into old stuff, this is a great home. It may be worth more in that regard than some other people. Some other people may find it just like they're buying it because it's all they can afford, as opposed to somebody who's buying it because they appreciate the aesthetics. Another thing I've learned with this this whole process is that you really should spend time living in an area that you might potentially move to. So if you should spend like 2 weeks there or a week. And the biggest question you have to ask yourself is, do I work from home or do I work with people in real life? If you work from home, you probably don't want to live in a rural, again, and it's a question of lifestyle. Are you living by yourself or do you have a family or whatever? Because that changes the what kind of house you're looking for, where you're trying to live. If you've got a family, you know, you can live in a more rural area. If you're a bachelor, you want to live in a more urban area. Unless you're a 65-year-old prepper who wants to live out in the woods and wait for the apocalypse. Not saying you should, because you shouldn't. I think another lesson that I've learned from this whole process is the idea that you can make it through life without making a lot of money if you have a lot of valuable skills. And I would argue that the ability to work on homes is working on homes and cars is the number one way to, you know, gives you power. The ability to choose what kind of job you want, the ability to choose what kind of career you want, the ability to say no to a job that pays money that you need because you have to pay the bills on car repairs, or you got to buy a brand new car because you can't afford to do car repairs, or you don't want to do car repairs, or you need to buy a new house because you don't know anything about repairing houses. Now, I grew up and up until my 30s, didn't really know anything about repairing things, fixing things, dealing with it. To me, it was all just some big mystical process. But now I'm slowly starting to understand how this stuff works. Now, I've replaced my own sinks at the old house, the faucets, I've replaced, you know, bathtub stuff. But for a lot of people, and the same thing with some cars, you know, you work on vehicle stuff. But if you're able to do that rather than hire somebody, you save a ton of money. The repair, this plumbing repair, if I had hired a plumber, would have cost probably a couple hundred dollars. He probably would have done more than was necessary. I went and bought a like $9 P-trap replacement and some plumber's stuff for the PVC pipe. Yeah, I did that. That was $12. A 10-foot pipe was $10 or $12. And then the P-trap was like 9. I spent less than $50 on this repair. As opposed to spending hundreds of dollars. Cars are a little bit harder because of the technology now, but with homes, if you know how to do your own drywalling, if you know how to do your own plumbing, if you know how to do deal with all these different things that need to be replaced, it's money that you're not spending. And consequently, money you don't need to earn. It also means you can buy older cars that may have mechanical problems, but you can work on it. It also means you can buy a home that is cheaper because it's not finished or it's got repair issues, but you know how to do the repairs and you can afford to buy that house and then spend far less money than someone else would working on it yourself. And this is what kind of gets me about all this obsession over education policy. You know, there was that whole election in Virginia and much of it had to do with critical hate theory. And I was just thinking, imagine there was a school that taught kids in high school and throughout their life how to work on their own homes. How to replace windows. How to install carpet. How to do the perfect drywall installation and, you know, dealing with the joints or the where the two pieces meet. How to do spackling, what tools do you need? What's the thought process behind a project that you're gonna work on? Imagine if they taught kids how to deal with the basics of home repair and maintenance. Imagine if that was an actually required course and it got more advanced as you got older. So in elementary school, you just learned to work with wrenches and with hammers, and you got to practice working on P-traps, you know, because that doesn't take any effort other than just, you know, twisting the clamp off, or learning how to turn things on and off in your house. You know, like the control panel for your power and understanding, and then you learn how to do your own wiring. Like, what's the safety around that? A lot of people don't know that. And some would say, well, you can just go on YouTube and look this stuff up. Yeah, here's the problem I have with YouTube. YouTube always shows the most ideal, perfect situation rather than what typically happens. I've never seen a YouTube video that shows my situations because they never show a pipe that's rusted over. There was another thing that when I was working on the P-trap with the house, in the basement, they had sprayed that insulation foam that hardens. They'd sprayed that all over the piping. Like, this is an area where you need to replace things. You don't spray permanent stuff there. That's where you put that fluffy Pink Panther insulation that you can pull out when you need to. But you're not going to see that in a lot of these videos, or you're going to have to hunt for it, as opposed to having somebody who, you know, walks you through the different parts of a house. You know, you learn about the human body. Why do you not learn about the different parts of a house? Here's where the water comes from. Here's where your water goes out. This is the difference between a septic and city water and sewage. This is well water, or you're on a utility district. Here's where your natural gas comes from. Here's where your electricity comes from. All these things that kids could learn in the education system, but they're not. And because the education system is not meant to, and they talk about the word empowering gets used so much. Everybody talks about, oh, we're empowering them. This is so empowering. Now you see some chick with her, in some bikini on a Instagram photo. This is so empowering. No, what's empowering is learning how to do your own maintenance work on your own property. Now, how do you properly install gutters and maintain them? See, this would empower a 18-year-old to go out and work on their own stuff and not have to rely on contractors. As opposed to critical hate theory and other, I mean, frankly, critical hate theory has been around since I was in high school. And all it does is teach you to feel bad about the country that you live in. It doesn't teach you any useful skills. It doesn't teach you how to think about issues in life or overall philosophies, you know. Like when you're dealing with a situation where there's, like, for example, with my job, I had to think very creatively and outside the box to salvage the situation. I had to use Sherlock Holmes type logic to reach the conclusion and the solution. But that's because I've read enough Sherlock Holmes novels to understand how Sherlock Holmes did his deductive reasoning and employed that. But I didn't, and I also took an introduction to logics course that helped out a little bit. But those were things I did outside of school. These were all things that I did on my own. And this is becoming more acutely apparent for me as I get older about all these different things that would make it easier to navigate life. Because when you make tons of money, you know, the saying that money doesn't solve your problems, it solves a, I've said this before on some other podcast, it solves a lot of problems. If you make enough money, you don't have to, there's stuff that you just don't have to do. You don't have to work on your car. You can pay someone else to do it. If you make enough money, you don't have to deal with certain types of people. You can just pay someone else to deal with it. If you make a lot of money, you don't have to worry about, you don't have to know things. You can be an incredibly ignorant person if you are, if you make enough money in a specific field. If you're making $300,000 at Microsoft or Amazon, you don't have to know anything about other things because there's no consequences for it. You can throw money at it. Now you get into a you get into some sort of traffic infraction or altercation. Now just pay off, pay some lawyer, hire some lawyer to deal with it. Money allows you to avoid the consequences of your behavior. It really does. Poor people don't get to do that. Unless there are certain types of poor people where they're part of a protected victim class, then they can get off. But if you're a guy like me and you're poor, which I'm not, but just throwing it out there. If you're a poor guy like who is like me, you have to deal with the consequences because you can't pay, you can't buy your way out of the situation. Another thing is when you have money, you have power because other people need money and the ergo, they need you. They need someone like you. You can be a prick and get away with it because people need your money. You don't have to be an agreeable person if you are wealthy. I'm not saying that all people who are wealthy are disagreeable pricks. I'm saying that the ability to be a prick is there. Certain people who other people don't need, and this goes back to another thing that with the home repair maintenance and all that other stuff. If you know how to do that, you are a useful person. People have a need for people like you. And I see a lot of individuals that I know who are very good with home repairs where what drives them to work on with other, to do this stuff for other people is because they love being needed. It's a form of, use the word, empowerment. It's so empowering. I'm 22 years old and I'm wearing a bikini. So empowering. No, you are needed. People need you. They have, instead of paying a plumber, they can have you come over and help you out. This is what goes kind of ties in with the whole marriage thing where we always hear about, oh, men and women don't need each other anymore. Well, great. Necessity kind of drives value. If you don't need someone, then they are, if you don't need something, it's a luxury. If you need it, it's a necessity. Now, luxuries may have more value. Right? There are certain cars, they're a luxury car, you don't need that car. But when it comes down to actual situations, how can I put it? In times of, I'd say, when reality kicks in, luxury items are the first to go. During the Great Depression, luxury spending is the first thing that went away. But if you worked at a grocery store, I was actually watching this documentary on King Kong, the original 1931 film, or 32 film, I think. Willis O'Brien, who was the stop motion animation guy who did all the work on it, you know, you can look this stuff up. He was trying to entice a guy who was good at doing the artwork, like he was able to build all the different stuff that they would need. The guy was working at a grocery store. And he was not interested in coming to work for this film because the grocery store had steady work and paid him well. Why? Because this was in the bottom of the Depression when unemployment was like 20-something percent. The reason why is because grocery stores did not suffer. people needed to buy food. So those things are always there. People who have vital skills are needed and are considered, you're going to have a position and status with others that that people who lack those skills will not have. A rich man can avoid knowing those skills because he has something else people need, which is money. And again, this is stuff that the school systems don't teach kids how to become wealthy, and they don't teach them how to become useful. You have a bunch of people who don't have any useful skills and don't have a lot of money because they don't know how to make it, because they don't understand how income is generated. And that's been part of the reflection I've had on working on this house, is that these are all things that would have been nice to have been taught at some point in my life, and the education system did not do that. And you'd think at this point, people with this shortage of all the trades, the electricians, the plumbers, you'd think that there'd be an effort to encourage more people, more of that discussed in the education system. Imagine being able to graduate from high school knowing how to do electrical work. You can immediately go out and get paid $48 an hour. Or you can go work as a plumber and you don't have to go to college. Because none of these things exist to educate and empowering the student. It's designed basically as a giant grift for the people who get paid for being part of those institutions. All right, we're going to wrap this thing up. I know this is kind of an afterthought, but my book, The Legend of Ferenya, came out last week. You can find it on Amazon or Tower House Press. If you love the Legend of Zelda series, you absolutely need to read this book. And you can also go to I need to put a link to it on my website, tjmartinell.com. You can find links to all my other books. You're smart, you'll figure it out. So, laundry's done. Gotta head out, folks. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Mountain Pass Podcast. This is your host, TJ Martinell, coming to you from my Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia. Signing off.